This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And this is Peter Schwartz, along with my co-host, David Taylor, with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Louisa Jaffe, the CEO and president of a company called Tape, Michael McCoy, the president of Z Systems, Dan Ackerman, Teddy Mateo, Boyd Harder, co-founders and partners with Guyton Technologies, and Leslie Steele, the CEO of Interimage. Joining us first is a young lady by the name of Louisa Jaffe, the CEO and president of Tape. What is Tape?
Tape is a defense contracting company. We're a small business. We're a woman-owned, service-disabled small business.
When was the company founded?
2003.
And how big or small are you today?
Today we are, in terms of employees, we have 170 employees and 40 subs, so we employ over 200 people on our contracts, and our revenues last year were $25.5 million.
And what specific government services do you do?
We call ourselves systems engineers. We design management systems for a variety of projects for the military mostly and the Department of Homeland Security. We do a lot of work in training resource management. We're in cybersecurity and a host of program management type of activities.
Mm-hmm. So why start a business back in 2003?
Well, I was retiring from the Army Reserves, and actually not in 2003, in 2000, right after 9/11, shortly after that, I was retiring from the military, and I met Bill Jaffe, and I was bemoaning my fate to him that, oh, I can't believe it, I have to get out of the Army after 28 years, and he said something that really transformed the way I think about things. He said to me, Louisa, maybe there's a whole new way for you to serve your country. And he began to describe the importance of government contracting and how really needed the services are. The more I learned about it, the more it was a perfect blend for me of my, I also had a business background as well as a military, and it was a perfect blend of my business and military background. So he and I, a year later, got on a plane and went to Las Vegas and got married with Elvis. And when we did that, we decided to form our own business, government contracting, which he understood, and I was a very good business manager.
You funded it an interesting way. Tell us about that.
Yes, we did. We had a house in McLean, Virginia, and we had quite a bit of equity in the house, so we decided to sell the house and take all our equity out and fund the business that way.
So what were you drinking that day?
A lot of my friends asked me that. I had one friend who begged me not to do this. It turned out to be that we sold our house at the top of the market in 2004, 2005, and we made the decision because we said, do we want to put our money into a mortgage or do we want to put our money into a business? And after 5 years, where will we be better off? And we took the two columns, added them up, and we decided we wanted to put our money into a business.
So that's either a tremendous amount of confidence or just no fear. Which is it?
I wouldn't say it's no fear. I would say it's confidence.
What made you guys believe you could succeed?
Well, my husband, I was very experienced in business, being in business with my family. I came from an entrepreneurial family, and I was often involved in my family businesses. And I had a broad background in marketing, public relations, and also financial management. So my husband had a background in government contracting specifically. So I understood what we faced in terms of funding things and management problems, and he understood very clearly where to go and find the new business. So we made a very good partnership.
What was the nature of the family businesses that you had been previously involved with?
A very broad variety of things. When I was a child, my father was a soft drink bottler in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and he bottled Heyer's root beer and Royal Crown Cola, those kinds of soft drinks. He also had owned a radio station. Later, he became a stockbroker and then a real estate broker, and then he formed an investment group where they invested in several types of businesses, one of them being a chain of funeral homes, a fuel oil business, a chain of convenience grocery stores. And towards the end of my father's life, late in his life, in his 70s, he decided that when he was in 25 years, he'd be ready to retire. So he invested in a citrus grove that would be converted. He envisioned it being converted to residential real estate in about 25 years.
And were you involved in some of these businesses?
Yes, I was involved in many of those
in
various degrees. Well, I mean, they occurred over the course of my whole childhood and my young adulthood. So when I was a teenager, I don't know what other teenage girls talk to their dads about. My father was talking to me about going short in the stock market and inventory control and how you determine, you know, how to read a balance sheet. But what I would do is I'd stuff envelopes for him to send out to his stock brokerage customers.
You say that with a smile on your face. So something about that was fun. What was fun?
These
experiences with your father.
Oh yeah, it was my dad. He just had boundless enthusiasm and energy, and he just loved business. So I think that if I was smiling, I was just remembering maybe what I was thinking of specifically then is that I would consider it, you know, torture to have to stuff these, you know, stock things into envelopes and send them out to people. But inevitably, I learned something from it. So, I mean, that was just one of the things. I worked in the convenience grocery stores. I've been a cashier. I've stocked shelves. I helped in the schedule dispatching for fuel oil deliveries.
Was your mom involved in the business?
My mother was, yes. Not all of my life I'm one of five children. Mm-hmm. She was a homemaker for many years. But then after the children grew up, before there were children, she was involved. And then after the children were gone, she and my father ran all of those businesses together.
So husband and wife partners is not a foreign thing to you.
It was a model in front of me, and one that I think, although I didn't actually say it to myself maybe specifically, I think it's something I always wanted to create in life. And
that's
I
fabulous.
Have created a very similar thing, although very different business than my parents were.
Wonderful. Tell us about your Army career.
Well, I graduated from college in 72, and I went into the Women's Army Corps.
Why?
Well, I had graduated from college with a degree in English from the University of Florida, and I had no idea what to do with a degree in English if I didn't want to teach, which I didn't. And so I would go on interviews, and nobody cared that I had a college degree. They didn't care about talking about a career path, and they would make disparaging remarks like, why would I hire a cute little girl like you? You're just going to get married and leave me. And so I was very I just couldn't seem to get anywhere in St. Petersburg, where I was living at the time after college. And except the Army did care. The Army interviewed, they specifically sought women who had a college degree. and leadership potential. And so I that the more that I learned about it, the more I knew that was for me.
Was that the early days of the Volunteer Army?
It was. It was very shortly after Volar was announced, which I've forgotten the exact year, maybe 72, that Nixon started Volar. And the draft had ended, so the young men did not pour into the volunteer service, but the young women did.
What was it like in the early days to be at the front end of women participating in the armed services?
Well, that really wasn't the beginning of women participating. Women in the Women's Army Corps started in World War II.
Right.
And so however, it was a transition, because at that time, after Volar was started, a lot of people don't understand this, but the Women's Army Corps was actually a separate army. It wasn't really one corps like the infantry or the quartermaster corps. It was a whole separate army with separate assignments and so forth. So that meant that there was absolutely no career progression for women. So in order for that to become a real career opportunity, the Women's Army Corps had to be merged into the Army. And that was the end of the old Women's Army Corps and the beginning of the new women in the Army. And so very interesting. I mean, I'm very proud of that part of my own personal history. And
what do you think your military experience taught you?
I think the most important thing my military experience taught me is that they have a lot of what they call confidence training. It's not really teaching you confidence. It's teaching you confidence in your equipment. Like, you have to go into a gas-filled area with a gas mask, and you learn to have confidence in your equipment. But I really think that it taught me that that there is no situation that I can't deal with. I may not know. There may not be someone around, probably won't be someone around to tell me what to do, but I have the resources within myself to solve any problem.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
The toughest thing I've ever accomplished? I've had some great experiences, so I'm not sure. The toughest thing.
How about your greatest experience, real quick?
One of my greatest experiences, I was a public affairs officer in the Army, and one of my most wonderful experiences was meeting Sarah McClendon, who was a White House reporter from FDR through George W. Bush. And so she had been in the Women's Army Corps, and I met her as an elderly person and got to escort her around the Pentagon and other places. And we were photographed in front of the Women in Military Service Memorial Dedication, and it was put on the front page of the Los Angeles Times. So
wonderful.
That was a lot. That was a very fun thing.
What's the website address, Louisa?
tape-llc.com.
Great. We've been speaking with Louisa Jaffa, who is the CEO and president of TAPE. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Taylor, with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney for helping me with the interview today. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. Joining us today is
Gordon Bernhardt.
Gordon, what is Bernhardt Wealth Management?
Bernhardt Wealth Management is a registered investment advisory firm. We're one of the top independent wealth management firms in the Washington, D.C. area.
What makes your company special?
I'd say three things. One is that we are a personal chief financial officer. We act in that capacity for our clients, so that means we help them address their investment issues. We also focus on the holistic approach, so that means we focus on wealth enhancement, wealth transfer, wealth protection, and charitable planning issues for our clients. Second area is that makes us special is that we are a registered investment advisor. We don't have a broker's license, and that simply means that we have a fiduciary duty to always act in our client's best interest. Most of the industry have broker's licenses, and some of them have advisory licenses, and a broker is held to a suitability standard. We're held to the fiduciary standard.
So what that means to a customer would mean that you work in their interest, not for the interest of the stock that you're trying to sell.
That is correct. And the third area that makes us special is that we have a very academic approach to investing. Everything that we recommend to our clients is strictly based on academic research.
And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I love helping clients. You know, I'm passionate. I get satisfaction out of knowing that we touch people's lives. We can then, you know, our role is basically free up their time so they can focus on what's important to them. For some of our clients, that means their family and grandkids. For some, it's their business. And others, it's their charitable interests. We solidify their relationships in those areas.
Great. How can someone reach you?
We can be reached on by phone at 703-356-4380 or on the web at bernhardtwealth.com.
Great. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and we've been speaking with Gordon Bernhardt from Bernhardt Wealth Management, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is Peter Schwartz, your host, along with David Taylor, my co-host with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Joining us for this segment is a young man by the name of Michael McCoy, who's the president of Z Systems. What is Z Systems?
Z Systems Corporation specializes in information technology, logistics engineering, and total package fielding.
What does that mean?
Well, from information technology, Z System build applications that track equipment and also inventory management and asset tracking. From the logistical standpoint, we manage government warehouses. We own government warehouses where a lot of the equipment that's associated with total package fielding is held and maintained and stored.
Right. When was the company founded?
The company was founded in 1988.
And you're the founder of the company?
Yes, sir.
Why found a company?
Well, my family, as in the early discussion, we have a history of business in my family. So I took it upon myself to kind of move forward in the industry that my family had actually started from the standpoint of my father. He was a sanitation engineer, but at the same time, collectively, his family owned over 2,500 acres of property. And at the time, he and his family at that time had a lot of interest in syrup industry, cotton gins, and things of that nature. So I kind of inherited that, which is how I ended up kind of starting the business.
So what a diverse background. A sanitation engineer who also owned property.
Yes.
What were you learning as a young man growing up?
Well, what I found out was that as a sanitation engineer, that wasn't the best profession. That was his job. But at the end of the day, him and his brothers, they actually, along with his family, they actually owned a lot of property. And I watched them actually do a lot of the cultivating of the farms that they own.
And so what do you think you took away from that experience?
Work ethics.
Work ethic.
Work ethics.
Uh-huh. So did you go to college?
I did.
What'd you major in?
I majored in business, and the business of science. And
why science?
Well, the farming. The farming played a role in it.
And what'd you do after college?
I moved to Washington, D.C. I graduated from Tuskegee in 1980. I moved to Washington, D.C. to go to grad school. And took on a part-time job and started working with a firm by the name of Technology Applications Incorporated. And from there, I worked with those guys for about 7-8 years, watched them turn into a huge success. And from there, started with another firm by the name of Dimensions International, watched them grow into a huge firm. And from there, asked to start my company.
Yeah, but along the way, you made a strategic decision about the direction that you, or the thing that you wanted to learn. Do you remember that in the green room?
Well, what I wanted to do was take advantage of the relationship that I had with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Robert Wright, who was my mentor. I watched him grow his company, and I made the decision when I started with his company that I asked him if part of my extra strategy could be that for me, not for his company, but for me, is that if I assist and support him in any role I could to get Dimensions where he thought it needed to be, at that time, would he be interested in allowing me to start my own company? So it was at that point where, you know, I met him when he started his company.
Right.
That I decided I was, you know.
Yeah, but you also made a shift into the contract side of the business.
I did. When I started out at TAI, Technology Applications, I was a programmer, recognizing then that a lot of the success of the company was based on the company being able to bid on proposals. I asked if they would transition me from programming into contract administration, in which they obliged. I came in as a junior contract administrator, and I learned to do the technical responses and the pricing, and put in a lot of hours, and made a decision that if I put in hours like this, and at the same time the company has been successful in the hours that I'm putting in, why not consider doing this for myself?
Right. Was there something else about your relationship with Dr. Wright that had to do with athletics?
Long story, yes. Coincidentally, Dr. Wright was my Little League baseball coach. And I met him when I was probably about 10 years old. And I would like to think that the success that we had on the baseball field was a result of him being successful. So that's kind of how we got started some time ago in Columbus, Georgia.
We hear this a lot on the show about the value of a mentor. What do you think, but mentors are picky who they choose to work with. Why did he choose you?
Well, I ask him that all the time, and he would always say, just keep going, don't worry about it. And I kind of take that approach. And I'm hoping that what he's really saying is that he saw something in me that he believed in.
What do you think that was?
The fact that I work hard as well. I believe in making certain that the job is done right. And when he started his company, I ensured that I do the best of my ability to help him make certain that his company was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I got, you know.
So what were the early days like of Z Systems?
Well,
how did you fund it?
Z System, actually what I did was I founded the company in 1988. I worked from 1988 to 1993, in which we actually considered 1993 as our starting.
Right.
From 1988 to 1993, I saved up as much as I could with the intent of leaving the company and starting Z Systems. And I did that, and at the time, my wife was pregnant. We had just got married, and I think we had about $3,000 in the bank. So if there was ever the right time to do it, that was it.
So tell me, what were the early days like?
Actually, they were challenging, but they were rewarding because when we started out, I had a good idea of how to start the business. And that was from the history of watching the two companies that I worked for. Mm-hmm. So I knew right away, we got into the 8A program, and I knew when we was accepted into the 8A program, the day that we was accepted was the day I started planning the extra strategy to lead the 8A program. Mm. And so I had positioned myself, whereas I knew that we didn't have a lot of time to when we got into the program. So I was prepared from day one to get going and start to make the best of the time that we had.
Right.
So we really weren't challenged. Had a little piece of work, and we actually grew the piece of work. Back then, we started what they call fielding for the downsized direct support system. At the time, fielding was just coming on board with the Army. It's the Army process for fielding new equipment and new weapon systems. Mm-hmm. And we were recently, well, we started in 1993.
Right. So you've had remarkable growth. You're up to 125 employees now. So that's quite a long ways from one. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the growth challenges.
Well, again, the challenges have been for us finding and bringing in the right resources. We've been very fortunate that I have been able to align myself with personnel who understand this industry. There were challenges, but the challenges weren't very tough challenges because we had a very good understanding of where we were going and what we wanted to do.
And what about leadership? How did you learn to lead?
Well, I think it gets back to playing baseball.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, but seriously, it really comes from, you know, I look at business, and I looked at the 8A program as a 9-year effort, but also looked at baseball as a 9-inning game. So each year, I tried to score, and that was the intent. And each year, as we tried to score, it required me to become more of a leader. because just as you score in the first inning, you want to score in the second inning,
right?
So forth and so on. Well, our position was that each year, my position was rather, is that each year I tried to lead the company to grow bigger and better each year.
Right. What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
Having this interview.
Come on.
No, seriously. It's managing the operation with so many other people who depend on you. Mm. Each day that we go out as a president and CEO, we are always doing interviews. And the interviews aren't always interviews such as these. When we're trying to find a new customer, we always are interviewing for the new customer. So that's the one thing. I mean, having a lot of people, lives pretty much in your hands, that's requiring you to make something happen.
Right.
So they can stay employed and so forth.
Right.
That's really challenging,
right,
especially in these times.
Sure. What's the website address, Mike?
The website is www.z-systems.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Michael McCoy, who's the president of Z Systems. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Taylor, with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is...
My name is Paul Smith.
And Paul, who are you with?
I am a benefits consultant with the Potomac Companies.
What does the Potomac Companies do?
Well, we help our client partners control the future costs of their health care.
What do you mean by future costs?
Well, you know, as time, every business executive, one of their top functions in any company as either an owner or a top executive is to control costs at their company. Well, healthcare is no different. You have to look at these things. You have to do things to control these costs.
Yeah. Well, why are you guys so good at doing it?
Well, what we've done and what our clients have been telling us is, as we look at the trends, over a 5 to 7 year period, a given company might see their rates doubling. And what a lot of executives don't realize is that that doubling, if they're, let's say they're paying $1 million a year for premium, goes to $2 million, but they're going to spend $3.5 million to get there. So it's not just a linear thing. It's more of a exponential thing.
I hear many business owners say that rising healthcare costs are a fait accompli. There's just nothing they can do about it. Is that true?
Well, that's why they'd want to work with us and find out. There are things that can be done. There's a lot of things that you have to do. There's a lot of information out there, and that's what we help them do.
In just a few words, is there a success story that you can share with us?
Well, it's an ongoing thing. It's savings over time. There's nothing that anyone's going to do as a shotgun approach and go bang and drop your rates significantly and keep them there. It's what are you doing? How are you monitoring? How are you looking at everything?
If someone wanted to contact you and learn more, what would they do?
www.potomacco.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Paul Smith. Paul's with the Potomac Companies. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and it's my pleasure to introduce to you three gentlemen with a company called Guidant Technologies. First is Dan Ackerman. Second is Teddy Mateo, and then Boyd Harder. Welcome, gentlemen. What is Guidant Technologies?
Guidant is a high-end IT consulting company that specializes in business intelligence for the federal space.
Give us an example of business intelligence in the federal space.
We develop solutions that enable data to be used and, you know, turn data into information, mainly large data. Data warehouses, and so forth.
Okay. When was the company founded?
1996.
Why start a company in 1996?
Well, I started as an independent consultant. I had, I met Boyd in my first project. I think it was his first project out of school as well. And I ran into Dan in my first customer and it was a natural thing to do, to join forces with people who have other skills that you don't have and can help you, you know, grow a business.
So these guys kind of joined you in the early days, and here we are.
Correct.
How big or small are you today?
We have over 250 employees, and we run over $52 million in revenue.
Wow. Dan, why did you join the company? Why become partners with this guy?
They roped me in. It was a trick question. We started as a product services company. We wanted to develop this product. I was a database administrator, and they needed the skills for the back-end development. So they came to me and said, hey, we have this great idea for a product, which they did. And they said, all we're asking you is 20 hours a week. I just had my second kid, and I said, 20 hours a week, I can't do that. And they said, well, we really need you, so how about 10 hours for you? And so I agreed to 10 hours, and I worked 20-plus hours every week after that. And to this day, they say that was their best sales job ever.
Okay. How about you, Boyd?
So Teddy and I go back to our days at Price Waterhouse, and had stayed in touch for years after that as he was growing this company. And just the timing came right at a point. My first son was born, and I was doing 5 cities in 5 days for Price, and just said, this is not the quality of life I want. And we jumped off. And
But isn't starting a business kind of like jumping out of the fire into the frying pan?
Yeah, but you're the boss. You know, you can control your schedule. You can control your time. You can hire people. You can choose who you're working with. You get out of it what you put into it, and you can determine the timing of that. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very attractive proposition.
So I have to tell you, I've been doing this show for 3 years, and it's the first time I've had 3 partners in an interview. What's it like to be partners this long? It's uncommon, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it takes trust, respect, and having skills that complement each other, I think, is pretty important. But
how about you, Dan?
I think it's the same thing. I think every idea you try to sell to the other partners they're going to come up with, you think it's a great idea, you can't find any holes in it, they're going to find holes in it. You have Teddy, who's always the optimist, you know, that everything's going to work out great, don't worry, guys. And you have Boyd, who's the exact opposite. You know, he's the pessimist. The world's going to end tomorrow, and we better be careful about this and that. But and I'm sort of the one in between, so it depends who I'm talking to as to which extreme I am. But I think you need that because it makes your decisions better. I know that I have to sell my decision to Boyd. I know that I have to have all the answers.
Right. How do you guys make the really tough decision? How do you handle disagreements?
It's we have this concept of you might disagree with it, but can you live with it? And if you can live with it, then we move forward. If you can't live with it, it's shelved, we don't do it, and there's, you know, we don't go back.
Mm-hmm.
And like Dan said earlier, it's respect. You know, we respect each other's opinion, and as a result, that works.
What would you say, you guys been around for a while, was the toughest moment in the business? Or toughest period?
Yeah, back in, I think it was like 2002, early 2003, when we were almost all commercial-based, and our customer base was dot-coms and telcos, and that was very trying times for those industries. And dot-coms were falling like flies, telco was holding back on spending, and we had to go through a round of layoffs. And we had to lay off probably about 30% of the company, maybe 40% of the company. And, at that size, it's an emotional thing. It's a personal thing. You know, we were probably, 30 people big?
Yeah. What was that like, to have to go through that kind of a downsizing with people that you really cared about?
It's personal, right? At that size, you know everybody. You know their families. You know that you are the organization that's putting food on their table and paying for the roof over their head, and it can't not be personal. It's business, but, you know, you have a relationship with these people. The only thing that kind of gets you through it is thinking, well, we're taking care of the other 60%.
Right.
You know, it's for greater good, if you will.
How do you think you were changed as a company as a result of the dot-com bust?
We had to reinvent who we were, immediately move into a new market space, meaning the government, provide services that added value quickly and that can show a return on investment quickly, especially in the government space. But what we did was bring, you know, the best practices that we learned in the commercial markets into the government, and I think that was well received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where are you from, Boyd?
Sort of dotted around the country, Colorado through San Francisco here, but 1978 onward. Mm-hmm. Here, so quite a while.
Where'd you get the entrepreneurial itch?
I don't know if I can flag it where it came from, but I know some of the earliest signs of it were back in, I think it was around junior high school, with a paper route. Actually, there was a kid in the neighborhood who had a paper route, and he was moving on to high school, and it's not so cool, I guess, to have a paper route in high school. And I really wanted that paper route. I wanted a source of revenue. Allowance just wasn't cutting it, I guess. And I offered to buy his paper route from him, which he was very happy to do because paper routes weren't something that you sold. He didn't ever see that coming. Took the paper route, grew it, and then 2 years, maybe 3 years later, sold it to, you know, the next kid, and had grown the route tremendously with a number of new subscribers, and made very well a nice tidy profit on the sale of that paper route.
Right.
And liked the idea that you sell it, all that revenue comes in at once. You don't have to string it out over a long period of time. Didn't make a whole lot of money on the paper route itself until I sold it.
How about you, Teddy? The idea to be entrepreneurial.
Well, I come from a family of educators. My father runs the university. He still does. And I was groomed to be a PhD and a professor and an administrator. And one day I said, no, this is not what I want. I want to be different. I even have his same name. I'm very proud of it. But I want to be different. I wanted something different, and I want to go into business.
And so what was the toughest part of this for you?
In terms of
starting this business?
I had no money, no cash. I was completely broke. I had to take credit card. I was living in Tampa, Florida, and first customer was up here in Virginia. So I had to take credit cards, you know, the ones that come in the mail. I put them all in. But like 15 flybacks from Tampa to Virginia, pay my mortgage with those checks that come in into those, you know, those credit cards. And I didn't get paid for over 120 days. So that was, I mean, it was scary at a time, but I had nothing to lose. I was already broke, and being further broke is nothing.
Yeah. Did your father want you to go into business or go into academics?
He always wanted me to be an academic, but when I decided to start my business, being very supportive.
Yeah.
I think he always wanted me to finish my PhD, which I never did, but, you know, still time.
Is he surprised at your success?
He's very proud of it. I mean, he lets me know every week that how proud he is of what we have accomplished.
Yeah. How about you, Dan? Where'd you get the entrepreneurial thing from?
I don't know if mine was really came around the same way. I grew up in a lower income, middle income family, probably lower middle. So my drive was just to be successful. I just did not want to live that life. I think I kind of fell into the entrepreneurial thing. I ended up being an independent consultant. It was a little bit easier. I liked working the hours that I wanted to work. And then I ran into Teddy and started a company. I told him early on that the product company sounded interesting because it's something I hadn't done. I didn't want to run a consulting company because that didn't seem like fun to me. And then the next thing you know, a year in, we were trying to sell this product, and companies kept saying, we love the product. Why don't you guys come and use the product and consult with it? So we never actually sold the product, but we used it a lot. And it really gave us a lot of business. And the next thing you know, you're running a consulting company.
Where are you from?
I'm from Ohio, and graduated from Ohio in the mid-'80s, mid to late mm-hmm. 80s.
Mom and Dad doing back then?
My dad was a construction worker. My mom worked at a bank, in the back office of a bank.
Uh-huh. Was your father surprised at your success?
My father passed away early onset Alzheimer's, so that was about 10 plus years ago.
Yeah.
So I don't think he ever really knew that.
What do you think he would say if I was interviewing him?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd like to think he'd be proud of me.
Right.
I didn't see this coming, so I can't see how they would see this coming.
Real quick before we end the interview, where do you see the company in 5 years?
I think we're going to be back in the commercial sector as well. So we'll be complementing government with commercial as the economy kind of.
How about you, Teddy?
Continuous growth, success, and impacting the life of others.
Right. How about you, Dan?
I think right now we're focused on business intelligence. I think that there's what's the next big thing. That's what we're looking for.
Great. What's the website address, gentlemen?
www.guidant.com, GUIDENT.
Great. We've been speaking with Dan Ackerman, Teddy Mateo, and Boyd Harder, the co-founders and partners of a company called Guidant Technologies. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is
Jonathan Lee.
Jonathan, who are you with?
I am with the Foundation for Financial Education.
What is the Foundation for Financial Education?
We're a financial education nonprofit that brings educational resources directly to the public.
Well, can you give us an example of resources?
Sure. We do educational workshops on a variety of topics, and we bring them right to the corporate world or through associations or through businesses or church groups.
Some of the resources would be who or what?
We get expert speakers to volunteer their time on specific matters that people ask about so we can deliver educational workshops on topics like estate planning, tax advice, college education funding, on a variety of topics, pretty much whatever they ask for.
So in other words, you could bring to a group a $500 an hour attorney for free to talk about things that were important to that group.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of our speakers are very, very professional experts in their field. It would be very difficult for a normal person to get in front of one of these people for any advisory services without spending a lot of money.
Is there a hot topic now, for instance, that a lot of people are requesting?
Yeah, our most popular workshop is called Financial Pitfalls, which is the 7 most common financial mistakes that people make and how not to make them.
Yeah. So a success story or an example of the benefit of attending one of these workshops would be what?
Yeah. So, I mean, we understand the economy is down and companies need to get their arms around their employees. So we'll go in there and they will actually use us for their training program so they don't have to hire outside companies to come and do their training.
If someone wanted to avail themselves of this great opportunity, what would they do?
Well, our phone number is 240-499-0390 and our website is www.f3eonline.org.
We've been speaking with Jonathan Lee of the Foundation for Financial Education. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and it is my pleasure to introduce to you Leslie Steele, who's the CEO of a company called InterImage. What is InterImage, Leslie?
InterImage is an information technology services firm, and we specialize in creating software applications that help organizations and their employees be more efficient and have better information at their fingertips to make decisions.
Give me an example of what that actually means.
Sure. We create applications that give organizations capabilities, for example, in workflow or case management. We modernize systems with new technologies to make it more cost-effective to maintain them.
Can you give us an example, a success story real quick?
Well, sure. Right now, we're doing work for Federal Aviation Administration, creating for them, designing and developing for them, a new acquisition system.
Mm-hmm. When was the company started?
In 1996.
And how big or small are you today?
We've got about 100 employees.
Why start a company in the first place?
Well, it's an interesting story, and there really are, I would say, 3 factors that led to the formation of the company. The first was I was working in corporate America and got a bit tired of banging my head against a glass ceiling. 2, I thought that I could do it better and create a company that was a better place to work, providing better value to its customers. And the third really was about opportunity. When started the company, the internet was still very young. There are very few websites worldwide. And I saw an opportunity to use that technology inside the bounds of an organization to help companies share information more efficiently, get information out of filing cabinets and making it available.
So you saw an opportunity, apparently,
right,
before most other people saw this.
Yes.
What is it about you that enabled you to do that?
Well, I had worked in large organizations and had worked, in fact, with their IT components of the organization to provide systems that I used as a user. So I had an understanding of creating applications from a user perspective. I certainly had an understanding of the value of information that was trapped inside of filing cabinets and not readily accessible. I had appreciation of the need to have better information quickly to make decisions. So I understood that side. And you
thought you could just do it better if you went out on your own?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Talk about the glass ceiling a little bit. How did you experience that?
Oh, I experienced it in a variety of ways, but a lot of it had to do with limitations around the ability to make decisions that I thought were the right decisions. You know, there was some freedom and flexibility to make decisions, but it was always within a context, and that created and imposed limitations that I didn't think were always the right ones.
Was that the central problem, the fact that you couldn't live with the fact that you didn't think these were the right decisions?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was tough to get into the executive ranks in primarily male-dominated organizations, and that's why I would be stuck at that level where I couldn't have sufficient influence in outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to advance.
Right. So in 1996, you decided to start your own company.
Right.
How'd you fund it?
Out of personal savings.
How scary was that for you?
Well, it was scary. It was scary. On the other hand, I had confidence that one way or another I could get through, I could always fall back on doing consulting work, which I'd done a lot through my career. So it wasn't that scary.
Mm-hmm. Where's the confidence come from?
I would say that really came from childhood.
Tell us about your childhood.
Well, grew up in New England, so I'm a New England girl, and in a small town. And in many respects, ended up raising myself.
Yeah.
And it really developed strong reliance, self-reliance.
Right. You shared with us in the green room that you lost your father and other family members at a very young age.
Right, when I was six.
Yeah.
And so it was a difficult time for my remaining family, for my mom, who moved us up to a small town in New Hampshire near where she grew up, and she got a job there, and so she had to become a working mom and a single mom. And
At 6 years old, your life is just abruptly altered and changed.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
Turned upside down. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
It was hard to make sense.
How did you make sense of it?
I looked internally.
Well, say more about that. What were you finding when you looked internally?
What I found was I think for self-preservation, I had to become very reliant on myself.
Right.
And independent. And I found that I could do that. I could find a path, and I could be successful, for example, in school, in sports, by being very self-reliant and taking care of myself. And, to a certain extent, you block off some of those emotional needs that a child may have. I knew I could always count on myself to get through any situation.
Right. So looking back on it, how do you think that time of your life shaped you into the person you are today?
Oh, I think it had a huge impact in that I knew, for example, in starting this company, that one way or another, I could get through any difficulties that would be thrown at me. Throughout my career, I knew that whatever path I chose, I would be okay, and I could live with the consequences of my decisions. It probably gave me a confidence to make decisions more readily than perhaps some other people can, because I know I can get through the consequences of whatever those are.
So you're a college grad, right?
Absolutely.
What'd you major in?
Industrial and labor relations for my undergraduate degree.
What the heck?
Yeah. Well, I knew I wanted to go on and get my MBA. I knew I wanted a career in business. I didn't want an undergraduate degree in business. I thought more diversity in my education was important. Education's always been important to me.
And when did business become important to you?
When I was in high school, I decided that path. My first career choice was going to be a city planner, but then decided urban planning wasn't quite for me and wanted to go into business.
Where did you learn how to lead?
By doing. Really, by doing. By watching other people. By having the confidence in myself that I could do it.
You said here you wanted to build an organization that valued employees.
Right.
Why?
Well, I like making a difference. And that's really what motivates me and inspires me, is to make a difference. And that's in the lives of employees and in our customers. That's really where I get my satisfaction from. And I wanted to create a place where people would have opportunities to grow beyond what they thought they were capable of, to get the chance to try and perhaps fail at times without getting their hands slapped, because that's really how we learn and grow, by making mistakes and learning from those mistakes.
Right. What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
Wow. Let's see. I would say that perhaps one difficult thing that I've been wrestling with recently is, in many respects, I'm a bit of a private person, and I've started a blog on the company website, and learning the balance of being out there in public is interesting. Interesting challenge for me personally,
right,
as a relatively private person.
What does your mom think of your success?
I wish I could ask it. She unfortunately has died as well.
I'm sorry, if I was interviewing her, what do you think she'd say?
I know she would be incredibly proud of me.
Wonderful. Yes. What's the website address, Leslie?
It is www.iimage.com, and that's spelled www.iimage.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Leslie Steele, who's the CEO of InterImage. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Louisa Jaffa, the CEO and president of Tape, Michael McCoy, the president of Z Systems, Dan Ackerman, Teddy Mateo, and Boyd Harder, who are the co-founders and partners of Guidant Technologies, and finally, Leslie Steele, the CEO of InterImage. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Taylor, from Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, for helping me with some of the interviews today. I'd also like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Do you have what it takes? Are you ready to stop drugs, alcohol, and tobacco? Join the Federal City Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, and the Federal City Public Service Foundation for the 10th anniversary Stop That Youth Step Show. Support your local middle and high school-aged youth on Saturday, March 24th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Howard University's Crampton Auditorium. For more information, visit the FCACDST.org. That's the FCACDST.org.
Thousands of volunteers, dozens of opportunities, and one day to serve in your community. Join Hands-On Greater DC Cares for Serve-A-Thon 2012, Saturday, April 21st. Paint a classroom, clean a park, serve at a senior citizen's home. You choose the volunteer project that's right for you. Serve with friends, neighbors, or coworkers for the largest public service day in the DC region. Then celebrate with others at the Serve-A-Thon after party. Learn more at greaterdccares.org or call 202-777-4447.
Today, 1,500 babies will be born too soon and too small. Many will have serious health issues, but you can help moms have healthy pregnancies and save babies' lives. Join the March for Babies on Saturday, May 12th at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C. We'll be walking together for stronger, healthier babies.
To register for DC or find a location near you, visit marchforbabies.org. WTOP and Dixon Hughes Goodman are proud sponsors of March for Babies.